As far as the organizational factors of politics are concerned, one is whenever there are decreasing resources of organization, since the total kitty is less and there are multiple people who want these kind of resources, naturally there is going to be a lot of politics interplay among the departments, among the people, so that individual gets the maximum resources for his own need. So wherever the resources are not abundant, wherever there is a decreasing resources in the organization, naturally political activity increases and lot of politics is played. If there are major changes in the organization in the form of, say, merger and acquisition, in the form of a major crisis in the organization whereby now downsizing is done and major changes are occurring in the way the organization used to do all their activities to achieve their goals, if they are changing their strategies, naturally at that time lot of political activity will increase. Then culture of low trust is there. When there is a role ambiguity, a person's role clarity is not there, and whenever there are unclear performance measures, that means clarity is not there regarding the standards of performance, naturally lot of politics will come into play, because there are people who are going to take undue advantage of this. And wherever there are self-serving senior managers who are basically interested in their own benefits rather than motivating their juniors and overall taking along with them and benefiting everybody in the organization, naturally this kind of behavior is going to lead to lot of politics. Then whenever the people's response is negative, and there is, because of this, what will happen? The people will feel that here the office politics or the organization politics is going to affect our promotions, it is going to affect our salaries and increments, and hence naturally those who are buttering the seniors, those who are having coterie with certain people of clout, they are going to be highly benefited due to this politics, and hence overall people's morale is going to be negative, and this will lead to decline in performance. So what should be done? If there is a politics, one should know how and why of this politics is occurring, and decision making should be there in such a way that if at all politics is used, it is for the department's benefit rather than an individual benefit it should be used, and in that case people's morale should improve and high performance may increase. And if there is a defensive behavior, if politics is seen, then one should treat these employees by giving them mental support, by coaching, by supporting them, mentoring them, etc., and making them understand that it is not going to harm them in future. So with this, let us understand, whenever there is a power in politics, there are two people or two groups who are going to have difference of opinion. So naturally they may not agree to everything what's happening because of their past experience, because what they are observing in the organization, what's happening. Some of the people are benefited to a great extent, while others are at times treated in very bad way. Some people are becoming more and more autocratic, and with this what will happen, the morale of people will go down, and there is a likelihood to be conflicts occurring among the people or among the groups in the organization. So what we mean by conflict? Conflict can be defined as lack of agreement or harmony, or an earnest effort for superiority or victory over another person or another group. Then naturally the conflict is occurring. Initially the conflict may be latent, then it will surface little bit, and then only it is going to come into play obviously, and then it is going to give us some manifestations of these conflict in the behavior of people. So let's understand what is the process of conflict. There are these five stages of conflict. There is initially potential antagonism or discordance. Then comes understanding and personalization. Then the intent. Then the conduct of the people. And finally the consequences of this process of conflict as the last stage. So what we mean by potential antagonism or discordance? Basically, this occurs due to three factors. One is communication, the second one is structure, and the third one is personal variables. When there is a miscommunication due to language barrier, due to semantics, due to some noise, due to some barriers of communication, naturally, or some people are highly egoistic, who are going to communicate in a way which is going to hurt the other people, and then naturally it will lead to conflict generation. Then due to structure, if the team size is very big, if there is lot of specialization, clear authority is not there, member goal compatibility is not there, leadership styles are more of autocratic styles, reward systems are not proper, where some people are having more benefits as compared to the others due to personal bias, and the level of interdependence among the groups is more, naturally it is going to lead to more and more conflicts. So size and specialization are directly related to potential of conflict, while tenure and conflict are inversely related. As the number of years people are staying together increases, naturally they have become more coherent, they have understood each other's way of working, and then the conflicts are less likely to occur. So higher the interdependence between the groups, higher the chances of conflict as compared to mutually independent groups where they are not coming into contact much due to their independence in their way of working, in the product that they are producing or the service that they are offering to the customers. Personal variables, if we see, it include the personality of the person. So those who are suspicious kind of personalities, or when the boss is, say, extrovert or type A personality and the subordinates are going to be type B personality, or the vice versa. So if you are not able to understand the personality of each other and behave accordingly, there will be a conflict. If some people are highly emotional, like they become angry very fast, then also naturally the person under the influence of rage is going to behave differently, and naturally it is leading to lot of conflicts. If there is a disagreeableness, neuroticism or self-monitoring, usually it will lead to more conflicts, because self-monitoring person is going to change his emotions based on the situation fast, and the other person may not understand why he is behaving this particular way a moment earlier and now suddenly he is changing. And because of this, anger, sadness, happiness, etc. can be translated into behavior in which a person behaves, and it is going to impact the other person in such a way that the conflict will be generated. Then comes second stage, where understanding and personalization occurs. In this stage, the factors mentioned in stage 1 earlier, whatever we have seen, go beyond existence and tend to negatively impact one party, and the potential for opposition of incompatibility becomes real. So whatever was the potential, now it has become real because it has penetrated further deep into the psyche of that person. This stage is critical, as actual conflict is defined in this stage and the parties understand conflict issues what exactly are. And emotions impact perceptions of these people. Thus, negative emotions lead to oversimplification of issues. This will lead to loss of trust, lead to negative view of others' behavior, and positive emotions can reverse and be favorable effect during a conflict situation. Stage 3 will be the intent of these people. What exactly is the intent? That will define how the conflict will be resolved or it will be handled. There are two dimensions to the intent of a person. One is cooperativeness, that is the degree to which one partly attempts to satisfy the other party's concern. And assertiveness, that is the degree to which one party attempts to satisfy his or her own concerns. Based on these two kinds of dimensions, there are 5 conflict handling intentions which are seen. Either it can be competing, where people are assertive but uncooperative. They are having the attempt to satisfy their own concerns, but they do not cooperate with others, and hence it will lead to zero sum, where the person who is getting benefit, it will be at the cost of the other. So that's a competing. Then in case of collaborating, it will be assertive as well as will be taken care of. So they want to satisfy the other person also. So in this case, whenever the collaborating kind of intent is there, it will lead to win-win situation for both the parties, and both the parties are going to get whatever they get will be satisfied by this kind of resolution of the conflict or handling of the conflict. As far as the avoiding is concerned, which is unassertive and uncooperative, in this case he is not only bothered for his own satisfaction, and he is not also bothered for other satisfaction, and this will, what it will lead to, it will lead to avoidance of the conflict, so that both the parties will be ultimately very much confused, and they will not like the way the conflict is handled, and this conflict will perpetuate further, and it can have adverse effects later in much stronger way, and it will worsen in future. While accommodating is something where there is unassertiveness for the self, in a way they are not much bothered for their own, but they want to please the others, that is going to be cooperative for the others. So here a person is going to lose, but he tries to give more to the other party, in which case is accommodating their needs. But ultimately this will lead to, in future, if they believe that they have tried to help them in some way, in future suppose their way of thinking changes, it can adversely affect them in future conflicts. And there are compromising way in which partly they are assertive and partly they are cooperative. That is mid-range between the two, where they will say that you come further and we are also coming further to arrive at some solution which will be satisficing to both the parties. Both the parties are not getting what they want, but at least partly they are getting. So this kind of compromising kind of intent is there in the conflict handling. In that case, the people will arrive at a conflict resolution in such a way that both the parties are partly winning, but they are partly satisfied also, in a way. So based on this intent, the person's conduct in handling the conflict will appear. So most people in focus in this stage, as conflict becomes visible here in the form of their actions and conduct, include the statements which they are going to make, the actions they are going to show, the reactions they are going to show in response to others' actions, and will be conspicuous attempt to implement these intents, and sometimes may deviate from the original intent owing to wrong calculations and unskilled ratifications at times. So it's a kind of dynamic process of handling the conflict. And finally, once the conflict is handled and based on the conduct of the people, finally you will see the consequences of this conflict. Either they will be constructive consequences or it can be destructive consequences. Now what we mean by constructive consequences? Here, in constructive consequences happen in case of low to moderate level of conflict, increasing effectiveness of the group. When in group, conflicts lead to quality decisions. By avoiding groupthink, it fosters creativity, interest and curiosity within the group by challenging status quo, and usually there is more of collaboration where win-win occurs and people are learning out of this conflict for future also. So it's a kind of constructive consequence. While a destructive consequence, the performance is well known, uncontrolled opposition is leading to dissatisfaction, dissolving common bonds, and it leads to group's destruction or lower its effectiveness as a whole. So the dysfunctional consequences can be in the form of lower trust, lower group cohesiveness, priority to conflicts over group's achievement of goals. It can lead to riots, fighting, etc., etc. So these are all dysfunctional consequences or destructive consequences of conflict handling. Now how to manage the constructive conflict? First, once you recognize when the disagreement is arising, so that at the bud level itself, once you understand what exactly are the reasons for that and try to modify the behavior, modify the way of handling this conflict in such a way that you are understanding and you are having effective communication between the two parties to arrive at the collaborating type of conflict handling, so that destructive conflict consequences do not occur. Allowing the groups split the solution into areas of their top priority and satisfying the same. If there are multiple things which are there in the conflict, one should find out what are the things which are more important to us. So for those which are having top priority, one should try to sort out these problems in an amicable way, so that both the parties are overall satisfied. Minor things can be either kept as it is, or they may not be satisfying to them, but still overall if the major things are satisfiable, then naturally both the parties will be happy about it. One should encourage open discussion, whereby one can find out what exactly are the problems, what are their pain areas which can be handled in an amicable way, so that we can have a constructive conflict resolution. Laying emphasis on common interests initially, so that gradually people start saying yes to the solution of the problems. So one should initially start with the conflict resolution where both the parties are having more or less similar kind of interest, so that it can be easily and happily agreed upon, and gradually those which are little more difficult to arrive at the solution should be taken. So we have seen how the conflict handling with basically five types of intents can be sorted out in a better way. So basically for handling conflict, ultimately what we need is a very good negotiation to be done between the two parties. So let's learn about negotiation. What is negotiation? Negotiations are formal discussions in which people or groups try to reach an agreement, especially in a business or political situation. It can be defined as a process that occurs when two or more parties decide how to allocate scarce resources that the organization is having. Well, as we see, in any team or in any two people, usually there is going to be some of the negotiation at all levels. Between the child and the parents also, there is a negotiation usually going on. When the child is appearing for the exam, The parents will tell, you have to read 8 to 10 hours a day. Let us not watch TV. Let us close the TV programs. But you should get 70% marks. In that case, I'll give you a watch. In that case, I'll give you a video game. So it's a kind of negotiation going between the two. Whenever a salesman is going to sell the car, there is a negotiation between the salesman and the buyer. Whenever you are going for selling some old stuff to some neighbor, there is a negotiation between two of you. So usually negotiation occurs at most of the places in our day-to-day life, and it is more common in organization. Between the, whenever the marketing person is going out for selling their products or services, whenever the purchasing agent is going to the vendors to buy certain things, raw materials and the other things which are needed, or the stationery that is needed for the office, or the computer programs or software that are needed for the office, there is going to be bargaining. It is negotiation. So what are the various strategies of negotiation? Either they can be distributive or it can be integrative. What is distributive kind of bargaining? Where there can be only one winner. It is a zero sum kind of bargaining that is occurring. It's a fixed pie where part of it, once it is taken, only the remaining part can be given to the other party. So here, in distributive type of bargaining, what's happening, we are distributing the fixed pie. And it is known as zero-sum bargaining. Here only one person can be the winner. For example, whenever a lady is going to buy vegetables or fruits, she is going to bargain with the hawker selling the vegetable or fruit, saying that this apple that I want, you are telling to sell 50 rupees for 12 and I want it at 38 rupees for 12. So ultimately, if the seller is going to give at 40 rupees also, he is going to lose 10 rupees. So it's a kind of zero sum or distributive bargaining. While in case of integrative bargaining, usually it's a win-win solution where people are going to bargain in such a way that both the parties are going to feel that they have got something worthwhile out of it. In case of distributive bargaining, usually there's a building of animosities and it may create rifts. While here, for long-term relationship, integrative bargaining is very important. Usually distributive bargaining is not preferred, but usually it occurs in most of the places, while integrative bargaining is preferred, but it is very difficult to achieve. Collective bargaining is one thing which is very important in industrial relations, and every 3 years usually there are charter of demands which are put forward by the union to the management. And there's a group of people from the management side and the union side sit together for this collective bargaining. And whenever the union is asking for more salary, more perks, more holidays, ultimately what will happen to the owner of the company? He is going to get less profit. So it's a kind of distributive bargaining that's occurring in many of the collective bargaining negotiations. However, if the union people are also comparatively having a better knowledge and they are positive, and the management people are also highly prepared and they know how to get work done from these people in a better way, whereby they are going to take less leave, they are going to increase their productivity by reducing the whiling away time that they are having on the factory by doing the work study and time study, etc., and then implementing them properly, which will lead to say 15% more productivity. In that case, they can give them higher salary or higher bonus, etc., and at the same time they are also going to win. So whenever there is an integrative bargaining which is occurring in case of say collective bargaining, if the management says that, okay, if you are asking for 40,000 as the bonus instead of 25,000, we agree to that, we are going to give you 40,000, but each and every employee each and every worker from your union members should work, say, half an hour more daily by removing the whiling away time during the lunch hour or the tea time. Maybe 15 minutes from lunch hour or from tea time, they can have 5 to 10 minutes towards the work, which usually they are whiling away the time and they are starting the work little later. So that should be avoided, or they should be more effective and efficient in working so that they are working more speedily and ultimately increasing the productivity of the company. And in that case, we are going to give you 40,000 rupees as this, or we are going to increase the salary by say 10%. So in that case, what will happen? The union people will be happy. At the same time, since the productivity is increasing, the management people will be happy because they are earning, suppose, say 1 crore rupees extra because of this increased productivity. They won't mind paying 70,000 or 70 lakh rupees to the workers, but still they are going to earn 30 lakhs out of that. So both the parties are happy. In that case, it's a kind of integrative bargaining that is occurring. And this will lead to better relationship between the union and management also. So it fosters long-term relationship and it is preferred, but not that easy to implement, because usually the union will give you the guarantee that it will be done, but usually the workers are not going to do that, and at times the union president and secretary, they are not going to be that forceful for the work, getting work done from these workers later. ¶¶